This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
a team of investigators from the World Food Programme are reportedly in the country to support the investigations. Uganda Prime Minister Ruhakana Rugunda, however, downplayed the scandal.
That's Halima Atumani reporting from Kampala on the corruption scandal over refugee funds. Details coming up. Also, the Winter Olympics have begun with several African nations competing for the first time. Zimbabwe is wrapping its voter registration drive. And political tensions remain in Kenya following the recent unofficial inauguration of opposition leader Raila Odinga as the people's president. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the United Nations and donor partners in Uganda are demanding accountability after claims money meant for refugees was being pocketed by Ugandan officials. Uganda is home to more than 1.3 million refugees, a majority from South Sudan. Though the country has been praised for its open-door refugee policy, claims of corruption now under investigation taint this image. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Ugandan officials at the ministerial office responsible for refugee affairs have been accused of a range of offences, including fraudulent food distribution, fraudulent refugee lists, and forcing refugees to pay bribes to get registered. The irregularities were discovered after UN partners followed internal procedures and demanded an expeditious investigation. A team of investigators from the World Food Programme are reportedly in the country to support the investigations. Uganda Prime Minister Ruhakana Rugunda, however, downplayed the scandal, calling it a small issue that will be handled.
It's true there have been some reports that there may be ghost refugees. Government last week instituted a team from the CID to investigate the matter. We're expecting the report and we'll deal with it.
Rose Malango, the UN resident coordinator for Uganda, expressed concern, saying the rule of law must be followed to ensure those responsible are brought to justice.
The work that we are involved in, the resources that we are talking about, touch human lives. So it is absolutely unacceptable that any of these resources should be misused. This is not just about resources. This is also about human dignity. We've heard about allegations of abuse of women and girls, and it's absolutely fundamental to make sure that we do everything in our power collectively to make sure we protect all women and girls, whether they're citizens or refugees.
Finances meant for refugees are channeled through the various UN agencies in the country and sometimes through the office of the Prime Minister. Some money is given to aid refugees through various agencies were allegedly given back to some officials in the office of the Prime Minister. Last week, the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, sounded an alarm for $3.2 billion for South Sudan refugees in the East African region. While in Uganda, he didn't mince his words.
Whenever this allegation, and it happens, pertain to our activities or to activities of the UN has very robust systems in place to investigate and to take sanctions. And this is resolved. So on our side, there is a full commitment to do that.
For now, the Minister for Relief, Disaster Preparedness and Refugees has directed the Permanent Secretary in the Office of the Prime Minister to interdict four top officials as investigations continue. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The 2018 Winter Olympic Games have officially begun in Pyeongchang, South Korea, with a spectacular light show and the traditional parade of athletes entering the Olympic Stadium. The games are sure to be full of drama, but perhaps the cooperation between North and South Korea will be the biggest drama of all. The divided Koreas have agreed to compete as a team in women's ice hockey when just a few weeks ago they were flirting with war. Athletes from North and South Korea marched together today behind a blue and white Korean unification flag. This year, Nigeria has its first team in the Winter Games, a women's bobsleigh team. They'll be hurtling down the ice at speeds of 150 kilometers an hour. Other athletes originally from Africa will be making history at the Games. Akawasi Frimpong will represent Ghana on the skeleton, a small sled that rockets down the icy course. Simdeli Adibago will be Nigeria's first female skeleton competitor. Eritrea has its first competitor skier, Shannon Ogabani Abida, who was born in Canada to Eritrean immigrants. And Mame Bini, who was born in Ghana, has become a darling of the U.S. speed skating team. The Winter Games run through February 25th. Political tensions remain in Kenya following the recent unofficial inauguration of opposition leader Raila Odinga as the people's president. Government officials termed Odinga's symbolic swearing-in an illegality and a direct challenge to President Uhuru Kenyatta. This week, opposition lawyer and politician Miguna Miguna was deported to Canada in defiance of a court order requiring the police to produce him before a judge. Norman Magaya is the chief executive officer of the opposition coalition National Super Alliance. VOA's Ruben Chama asked him what aspects of the deportation were illegal and unconstitutional.
The first illegality is that on the day of his arrest on Friday, court granted him bail and ordered that he be released immediately. That was not done. Two is that he was kept incommunicado. Article 49 of our constitution says immediately you are arrested, you must be promptly informed in a language you can understand. The reasons for your arrest, you must be given access to counsel. These are constitutional rights that are non-derogable. They are not limited by any law. All those were violated. Then he was kept and moved from one police station to another, held in very, very bad conditions, denied food and proper sanitation, which is a violation of the principles set out in our constitution. Today, a petition is being filed in court to challenge that deportation order. Next week, Judge Kimaru still has ordered the Inspector General of Police and the DCI to appear in court and explain the circumstances through which Miguna was deported.
Miguna was one of at least two or three members of the opposition National Super Alliance who were arrested for taking part in the symbolic inauguration of NASA leader Raila Odinga. What are you doing to prevent other opposition leaders from being arrested?
I think you can see clearly that our lawyers have been to court. Our court has given bail and ordered police not to arrest our leaders, our MPs and supporters who supported the event on 30th. Those orders are there. Yesterday we were at the DCI in compliance with the court order after granting us bail that we appear at the DCI for them to take statements or interrogate if they are investigating. They clearly indicated that they are not investigating any of us and let us free. We were not interrogated at all. Our position is that those court orders must be observed, for if the state starts breaking the law, the citizens will take cue, and the next thing we will have is anarchy.
Critics say that the NASA coalition has introduced a parallel government. Do you agree? And if so, doesn't that move lead to violence?
I think what is very clear is that, one, we have been very consistent that we don't recognize what took place on 26th of October as an election. We've said that it was a coronation exercise to usher in a dictatorship. The circumstances surrounding that exercise could not yield any credible winner that will take over the mantle of leadership. So our exercise is informed by our consistent position that we don't recognize anything that happened on 26th October, and by extension, the product of that exercise has no effect on us. So we are not and have not established a parallel government. We have established a people's government as set out in Article 1 of the Constitution through direct exercise of sovereignty.
The Right Honorable Raila Odinga has been quoted recently in a BBC interview as saying that he will create a people's convention at the end of this month. When and where will these assemblies take place, and what type of specific reforms would you consider that were not already in the 2010 constitutional reforms?
I think what His Excellency, the People's President, has said is that we will have a National People's Convention at the end of this month. Several agenda items will be placed on the table for the convention to deliberate and make resolutions. And it is the resolutions of that national convention that will then determine which way forward we take as a coalition. The process of the Regional People's Assembly gave birth to the 30th event of the swearing-in of the People's President. So we're now moving into the next stage of consolidating this agenda for electoral justice. It's our projected plan that the resolutions of this convention will lead us into a national referendum, and that national referendum will lead us into fresh elections, consummated through the electorate vote in the month of August 2018.
Yes. Some say there is dissension among your coalition partners. What's your response?
There is no disquiet among the leaders. They are on the same page as far as this agenda for electoral justice is concerned. We know that there was importunity and duress applied on some of our leaders by the American ambassador. Told him clearly he's an appendage of Jubilee administration, he must keep off, or otherwise we will stage demonstrations against him. So there is no disquiet amongst our file and rank. We have unit of purpose, the leaders are united, and we will execute this agenda together.
That was Norman Magaya, Chief Executive Officer of Kenya's opposition, National Super Alliance, speaking to VOA's Ruben Chama in Nairobi. Ethiopian journalist and blogger Eskander Nagga and two other prominent prisoners today refused to sign their letters of pardon so that they could leave prison. Nagga's wife, Sarkalam Fasil, told VOA's Horn of Africa service that Iskender refused to sign the letter after reading that it states he was a member of the banned political organization Ginboat 7. He told family members that he was falsely accused of being a member of the group and that he cannot be pardoned for something he did not do. Two opposition leaders, Andwala Maraga and Ababa Kisto, also reportedly refused to sign their letters of pardon from the government. The Federal Attorney General yesterday said that 746 suspects and prisoners will be pardoned. About 417 of them are federal prisoners jailed on charges of terrorism, inciting violence, religious extremism, and other related crimes, the government media reported. Zimbabwe's voter registration effort came to an end today. The campaign, titled the Mop-Up Exercise, was meant to register some potential voters who had not registered. Reporter Kudzai Zanawash has the report on what's next.
In preparation for presidential elections later this year, Zimbabwe has been compiling a new voter's roll through biometric voter registration, otherwise known as BVR. Andrew Makoni is the chairperson of Zimbabwe Election Support Network. He gives the stats of the people who have registered to vote so far.
As of yesterday, we got information from the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission that 5,264,674 people had registered from the date this BVR exercise commenced to date. And the information we also obtained was that 385,192 people were able to register during the mop-up exercise.
The voter registration blitz was continued in January after the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, also known as ZEC, had failed to register its targeted number of 7 million people. The target was later revised to 5 million when the mop-up exercise was introduced last month. Tariro Daphne is with an organization called Youth Empowerment and Transformation Trust. They have been actively involved in mobilizing the youth to register to vote.
I think it goes without saying that ZEC has done the best that it could in the circumstances, and that, I mean, 5 million is not a number that we can underestimate to say that ZEC didn't play a role or didn't play their part in trying to also register as many people as they could.
While the blitz comes to an end, those who have not registered can still register. Makoni explains.
We know that registration for the election that is impending will end 12 days after the nomination called seat. So it means, therefore, that voters will continue to register in the 63 district offices that ZEC will continue to conduct this exercise.
Daphne says it is refreshing to note that the majority of people that have been registering to vote are young people. The process has been somewhat smooth, save for cases of voter intimidation, where potential voters have been requested to bring their voter registration slips and serial numbers taken down. The ZEC and National Police have released statements taking a stand against such behavior. Makoni says they have been reporting such cases for a long time now.
We believe that such intimidation may have a chilling effect on voters who perhaps would say, if this information is being asked of us now when there is no election, what more during elections?
Makoni says they have not heard of any arrest in that regard, but the Electoral Commission ought to announce any when they do, as that will help potential voters vote without fear. Very few electoral reforms have been initiated thus far, despite growing calls for reforms. The country's new president and his administration have promised a free and fair election. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The United Nations and donor partners in Uganda are demanding accountability after claims money meant for refugees was being pocketed by Ugandan officials. The Winter Olympics have begun with several African nations competing for the first time. And political tensions remain in Kenya following the recent unofficial inauguration of opposition leader Raila Odinga as the people's president. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Egyptian army has announced the launch of a major operation against jihadists in areas including the rest of northern Sinai Peninsula. AP reports the area has been the epicenter of an Islamic insurgency spearheaded by a local affiliate of the Islamic State group. Egyptian Army spokesman Colonel Tamer El Rafai said that police and troops have been put on maximum alert for the duration of the operation, which involves the Air Force, the Navy, and the Army. The military campaign comes ahead of the presidential election in March, in which President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi is running for a second four-year term with no serious contenders. El-Sisi was elected in 2014 in a landslide with promises of restoring security. Seven years ago, a popular uprising ousted Tunisian President Zine Al Abidine Ben Ali, starting a peaceful transition towards democracy. There are concerns, however, that Tunisia could be backsliding on democratic development and human rights. Mohamed El Shenawi has details.
Scores of journalists recently held a sit-in in the Tunisian capital to express their concern that the government is threatening freedom of the press, a principal gain of the revolution. The Tunisian Journalists Union says it has logged 40 cases in which journalists were threatened last month as they covered nationwide protests over rising prices. Many journalists had their cameras seized after filming police battling protesters. Amy Hawthorne is the Deputy Director of Research at Program on Middle East Democracy in Washington. She links the crackdown on protests and journalists to the presence of some of former President Zine El Abidine Ben Ali's associates in the government.
It's a curse because there are these figures from the old regime who, after a little bit of time on the sidelines, came back into power in certain positions. Some Tunisians I talked to blame the presence of these people for some of the regressive policies that have been occurring of late. Police abuse, clampdown on the freedom of speech. They say there's no room for these people in the new Tunisia.
Hawthorne says the international community should pay much closer attention to what's taking place in Tunisia.
There are really serious economic problems. There are very serious problems with corruption. There are very serious problems with police abuse and arrests and suppression of peaceful dissent that really has no role in a country that is transitioning toward democracy.
Still, some analysts say there is hope the democratic transition is not over. Munji Addaoudi of Center of the Study of Islam and Democracy notes that Tunisia has undergone drastic changes, creating a government that combines parliamentary and presidential systems, drafting one of the most progressive constitutions in the region, and allowing new political parties and fair elections.
Tunisians insist that the successful political steps that they took after the revolution, they're not willing to go back on those.
But Sarah Yarks, a fellow at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, is among those concerned about signs of backsliding in democratic development.
The first is we're now seeing some figures from the Ben Ali regime in the cabinet. The second is the passage of the Administrative Reconciliation Law, which provides amnesty for civil servants who are accused of corruption under Ben Ali. It sidesteps both the judicial system as a whole and the transitional justice process.
Yarks warns that while Tunisia has avoided the political turmoil and repression that followed Arab Spring uprisings in other countries, its transition to democracy is not complete. She says it is incumbent on the West to focus on democracy building and institution capacity building and to do whatever it can to keep the democratic transition in Tunisia on course. For VOA News, Mohammed El-Shinawi, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yahya Suhaib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT on the internet. You can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
The Voice of America, VOA.